Hi, Jason.
Hi, Dan. Hey, why did you start?
You know what? I just felt like it was time.
You're mixing it up.
I am. I'm keeping it real.
We'll be the judge of that. Hey, I reviewed that Logitech, that crazy Logitech stand thing.
The base?
The base.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, the base.
Home base.
It's very... I don't understand it, really. I also got a Logitech Create keyboard, which I've never really used. I've like seen it in passing.
Is that the other smart connector one?
Yeah, the one
okay,
that you.
I think.
Have, like,
I think
the keyboard.
Lex Friedman has that one, which he really likes.
Yeah, I'm not trying to come down on Logitech or anything, because to be honest, like, they're the only manufacturer that has made, other than Apple, that has made smart connector things. Mm-hmm. But like I wrote a piece that I think is going to go up on Macworld today, hopefully. They don't tell me when they post things. Maybe it'll be tomorrow. That is about the right tool for every job.
Mm-hmm.
And how every good tool, the premise is every good tool has a point of view behind it. And it's not to say that you can't use tools for things for which they weren't intended, because that happens all
sure.
the time. I think great software is always used for something beyond what its creators intended. But I feel like there's still a point of view of, like, this is our guiding principle. This is why we build this tool. And if they learn that it's being used in a different way, perhaps they change and go, oh, now these are the reasons why we built this tool. But that a good tool has a point of view. It isn't trying to be all things to all people. It's got a reason for being. And I brought that up because I feel like the iPad is what it is, and a MacBook is what it is. And when I used the Logitech Create keyboard, which again came out last fall, but I never really got to spend an extended amount of time with it, I just kept thinking, why would I use this and not a laptop? Like, it turns mm-hmm. my iPad into a laptop, and the iPad's a really bad laptop because it's not a laptop. It's an iPad. And you have to, like, snap it into these plastic, like, frame. So it's not like you can just, like if it's in a dock, even like the base, or it's, or just in a little stand or something, you know, you just kind of pull off the keyboard, or if it's a Bluetooth keyboard, it's not even attached, and you go and suddenly it's in your hands, and it's a nice light thin iPad touchscreen. But with the Create, it's locked into this thing that you have to pull it out of in order to make it into what it's good for. And I just had this moment of realization of, like, this is, we are trying to make this tool into this other tool. And Apple's whole philosophy all along has been, like, if you want a laptop, get a laptop. If you want a tablet, get a tablet. And so I feel like the Create keyboard, like, pushes it over the edge, where it's sort of, like, defiantly saying, no, it is a laptop. And it's just not, you know. And I use external keyboards all the time, but it's just, like, it makes it... At that point, it's also, like, way bulkier and heavier than a MacBook or a MacBook Air would be. So, why?
I'm interested because I started using a keyboard case on my iPad Air a few weeks back, which is also a Logitech, the Type Plus, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I quite like it, although I have noticed that definitely there is frustration for it when I want to do something that is not keyboard related, like when I want to use it like a tablet. And fortunately, it's not too hard to, like, snap in or out. But yeah, definitely, like, it's not, I took it out at some point because I wanted to carry around the tablet, and I marveled at how much lighter it was with just a normal, old smart cover on it. So yeah, I think you're right. It's nice that it's modular in that way. And I think that's, you know, you look at the examples of the Windows tablets that have been around forever, right? And now things like the Surface Book, where they're kind of trying to split the difference. And it's interesting, but I don't know. I feel like it is still in that toaster fridge realm of something that's not quite as great at either, because it tries to appeal to too many.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, it turns out that for me, one of the great appeals of the iPad is that I can hold it in my hand, and, you know, and that when it's attached to a case that has a keyboard in it, it loses a lot of that appeal. And the perpendicular thing where you're where you've got a surface for your keyboard and then the screen is above it, you know, that works if, like, on a MacBook, it's not a touch screen. You're not expected to go up there. All your pointing and typing happens down below. And then, you know, on an iPad, it's a touch screen and there are things that you need to do on the screen. And so, like, you get the zombie arms sometimes and, mm-hmm. and you lose the lightness and the thinness by doing that. And it's funny. I went to Starbucks, yesterday, got a hot chocolate because I need to get out of the house, and I was writing a story about this, and I took the smart keyboard with me, which I don't love, the big smart keyboard, but mm-hmm. But that, you know, that's what's perfect about it compared to, like, the Create, is although it's not as good a keyboard, it's a better iPad accessory, I feel like, because it embraces what the iPad is, which is this light tablet that you carry with you, and if you need to prop it up somewhere and type on it, you can do that. And on the 9.7 inch iPad Pro, I feel like it's even better because it's a lot less bulky than, even though the keys are a little bit small. So yeah, I don't know. I still prefer having a Bluetooth keyboard and a little stand that I can put the iPad on. I think for me, that's like the ideal option. Not something like this. Although, you know, yeah. This is way more stable in your lap, I say, than on a table. If you're doing a lot of writing kind of on your lap, something like the Create is a better choice because it's a little rickety with something like the smart keyboard, and something like just an external Bluetooth isn't going to do it.
I think the problem... So for a while, I was carrying around, on the occasions where I thought I might want a keyboard, I was carrying around the Logitech Bluetooth keyboard in an old origami case. And it doesn't clip into the case right, but it does fit okay, and it basically works. My biggest problem with that is just, like, even in that keyboard case, putting that together with the iPad, it felt bulky and inelegant. And so that's part of the reason I wanted to try the actual keyboard case rather than a Bluetooth keyboard in its own little origami stand thing.
Right.
Was because I thought it would be more compact and more elegant. And it's certainly more compact, more elegant, but I also see the point you're making about, you know, it turns it kind of into a laptop surrogate, which it's never going to be as good at as a MacBook. And that was part of my frustration when I was carrying it around with me. Was that it was very good, but I felt like, well, I'm trying to use this like a laptop, and it fundamentally, I would fundamentally be faster doing these things on my MacBook.
Yeah, right.
Because it is a laptop.
Yeah, I mean that was the whole premise of the Macworld article that it just hit me that it's like if you want a laptop in your lap, get a laptop. Right. I mean, I mean obviously if you can't have a laptop and you have to choose one thing. But even then, I would say if you spend the bulk of your time using an iPad in a big keyboard case in your lap writing, you probably shouldn't use an iPad because the iPad's not as good. What I like about the iPad is its flexibility, that it can do that and it can be other things. But if you kind of lock it down where it's kind of just a weird laptop, I don't think it's as good. So and I love my iPad Pro. I'm not saying don't use it, you should use a laptop. I'm saying you're going to use it, I feel like beyond a certain point it's not being what it's supposed to be, what it was made to be, and what it's good at. I did notice, and I was really happy about this. So, you know, some people may know Marco Arment, who's on a million podcasts. Well, no, he's not on a million podcasts. He's on two podcasts. He's famously on ATP, which is a very successful podcast. Marco did a Mac app, his first Mac app called Quitter, and he did it because he wanted to manage his distractions of social media because he spends all of his days at his Mac and he was spending too much time on Twitter and too much time in Slack. And I had a moment where I thought, well, here's the other way to go, which is use an iPad. Because when I was working at Starbucks yesterday afternoon, I thought, this is... you know, this is one of the great things about taking a break and working on an iPad Pro instead of on a Mac, is that although you can be distracted with split screen, with notifications, it's a lot harder. It's harder to get distracted on an iPad, and I really like that about it.
Yeah, when it comes to focusing in on a particular task, I agree that there is this inherent distraction. And there's been apps for years that are, you know, something like Marco's Quitter or the things that shut off your network connection that until you've done a certain amount of work, or full screen writing apps.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of gimmick in that, and sometimes it can be helpful as sort of a nudge in the right direction. I think ultimately, you know, that's a people problem rather than a technology problem.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Because you can always turn those things off. So you gotta buckle down and discipline. But yeah, it's definitely can be helpful if you have trouble getting into that mindset. And I do agree that the iPad, I wrote a bunch of stuff on the iPad because a couple of years ago, I was writing some book stuff on the iPad because I felt like it was much easier to concentrate, go sit down at a cafe, sort of zone in and concentrate without getting distracted by, you know, whatever else was going on online. So I like that aspect of it. There's some things, I think it's interesting because there are different tools that are better for things. Like recently I was trying to do some organizational, like high level organizational work on a book rather than just like writing, but like reorganizing, brainstorming, sort of looking at things. And I actually found that I was like, oh, man, I really want to do this on my MacBook because I felt like certain things like copying and pasting large chunks of text and moving stuff around between multiple like documents inside of something like Scrivener, like, oh, it feels clunky. I got to spend more time going back and forth between my keyboard and my touchscreen. And I just feel like I'd be so much less scared of accidentally like cutting something or, you know, doing the wrong thing on my Mac than I would be on my iPad. So but I think that speaks again to your point that there are different tools for different jobs, and that they each find their, you know, strengths in different places. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting too when you look at some of the other platforms that Apple has been attempting to sort of ramp up. I mean, we've seen a lot of implementations on the Apple TV of iOS apps, and it turns out that in a lot of cases that's not the right tool for that job. Because the app, you know, apps that are making that jump aren't necessarily going to be used in the same way on the Apple TV, say, as they are on, you know, an iPhone or an iPad, whether it be mm-hmm. a game or some other application. So I think that's part of the reason that developers, this is sort of linking into a topic that we talked about on Clockwise this week, but part of the reason I think developers have hesitated in or maybe haven't developed as many novel apps for the Apple TV is there's still been a mindset in its initial, you know, 6 months or so that there's let's move over an iOS app and just sort of adapt it to work on the Apple TV without necessarily making it an app that needs to be on the Apple TV.
Right. Well, yeah. You could argue like the Siri remote is a weird tool that I'm not sure is the right tool for the job, where it's got a touch screen and it's got a microphone, and I'm not sure whether I'm convinced that that's the right interaction or not. It's fine. I've gotten used to it, but I don't take great joy in picking up the Siri remote. You know, in fact,
I avoid it as much as possible.
Yeah, because
I use Universal.
I worry about like touching it wrong. You know. So the Logitech base, to get back to that, is like it's like a aluminum stand. It's very much like something you'd see from 12 South or something like that. It's Apple styled. It's a silver aluminum stand, solid. But it's got a smart connector pad on the base of it and a lightning port in the back. And the idea is that you can put an iPad Pro, either size, in there and it'll charge. And it does that. But it's a weird product because I'm not entirely convinced that it can charge it at anything near the rate that a direct lightning connection could charge. And the lightning connector is right there on the back. So it's not like you don't have a lightning connector right there. So basically, you know, you're paying $99 for not having to plug in a lightning connector when you put this thing down. Which is, again, for some people, they're going to want to put this somewhere and station it there and have it permanently like plugged in and not have to fiddle with cables. I can see that it has some appeal, but for me, I was like, you know, is that really necessary? But it's also a stand. It only has the one, you know, one height. It's not adjustable. So I found like it was not leaning back far enough to be like a typing stand unless I was sitting down kind of with it. It's much more a viewing stand for when you're in the kitchen or you're watching a movie or something like that and you want to put it on the stand and just kind of view it head on. It's much more for that than it is for, I would say, doing anything productive. And the thing that really kind of killed me about it, and it's just, this is, of course it's this way, this is how it has to be, is the smart cover and the smart keyboard You know, they connect to the iPad Pro on the left side magnetically, and that's where the smart connector is. So every time you set this thing down, even though my inclination would always be to set it down on the right side and keep my cover on and flip the cover over the back, you can't do that. You have to pull the cover off of the iPad so that you can put it in the stand and then, you know, set your iPad cover down somewhere. And so I just had that moment of like, yeah, you could make this, but I'm not entirely sure why almost anyone would want to buy it.
Yeah, and that's a challenge I've always had with stands to a certain extent. I mean, and docks, like going back to, you know, even the original iPhone, which came with a dock, and some of the iPods that had docks. Was the original iPhone? Certainly the original iPod came with one.
Yeah, I think the original iPhone.
I think the original iPhone
had
one
dock,
too. Yeah, that was in the era of. I just threw out as I was cleaning out my office a bunch of old dock inserts. Those little pieces of plastic you could pop in. I was like, oh my god, I'm not sad about leaving that era well behind. I even have an old Griffin power dock that I just threw in my electronics recycling bin, which was the 4 dock for iPods or anything with a dock connector, basically. And I thought 30 pin connector, I'll never use that again.
Yep.
And I think the problem is just, and maybe I've never had quite the right setup for one of those docks, but I use these things so much that I rarely am going to put them in a dock. Like I think they envisioned at some point, you know, when you plugged in your iPod or your iPhone, you would like sit down at your Mac and you'd plug that thing in. And it's like, I constantly want to access it and I don't want to reach over to a stand to be using it. And I don't know. I've never been sold on the whole charging dock, charging stand thing. Although I do think the one thing that every once in a while is the watch. I kind of feel like just because I hate traveling with like this huge mess of cables, I feel like there must be a better answer for that. But it always requires so much in the way of compromises, whether it be taking, you know, having to pull off that cover every time, having to put it down a certain way, not being able to change, you know, the orientation. It always seems very fiddly for me, and it's something. It's fine if you want to display something because you treat your house like a museum, I guess. But as far as usability goes, I've always been a little skeptical when it comes to those things.
Yeah, I agree. I will tell you. I mean, I did think about this in terms of like iPad productivity. It's like it's too low, and when you put it on a stand, it sort of defeats the purpose, and it can get a little wobbly depending on how. But I did have that moment of like, well, this is a cool idea to have like an iPad, iPad stand like dock interface. But I started to think, well, yeah, but all it does is charge. What I wanted when I plugged it in was like, well, this would be cool if I could have this at my desk. And I could come in and drop my iPad in it, and it would, I don't know what, right? It would get, you know, connect to a microphone and Ethernet and an external display and whatever. I'm not sure how much of that is really practical for an iPad Pro, but I could see something like that where there's more data flowing back and forth, which is in the smart connector spec. Although I'm not sure the smart connector spec lets you do essentially USB transfers.
Right.
It's probably less capable than that. But it did give me that little flash of like, you know, I could see the value in popping your iPad in and getting to work. It's just that the base doesn't seem like it's quite right for that. But I see the appeal of not dropping it in there. But still, I having used it, I thought I people who want this will know that they want it, but I have a hard time coming up with a lot of examples of why you would want it.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, I am interested to see if anybody else decides to going forward doing something with the smart connector.
Yeah.
Because Apple made a big play for it, but it's very little right now.
I have to admit that at the time I was thinking, well, what else could you really do with this other than keyboards? And I still kind of feel that way. And I don't know whether it's that or whether it's something with the spec, like whether it's like technically something weird about it or whether it's something with Apple's licensing. The fact that we've seen none, you know, the four existing shipping products with the smart connector are the two smart keyboards and the two Logitech things. And that's
it.
So is there something there? But I did think, you know, my gut feeling was that we would see more keyboards, like different keyboards, different takes on on an external keyboard for the iPad Pro. But, you know, the big iPad Pro, and even now with the smaller one, you got to have, how big is the addressable market for the smart connector right now? So that I'm sure that that's a part of it too. I don't know, because yeah, it's a good question of like, you know, what can you do with this? What are its capabilities? And I don't know enough about the capabilities, like as a accessory developer, what I would get out of doing it. And if there's much that makes sense in terms of using it, other than it feels a little bit like basically Apple made this for keyboards and didn't want to make a big keyboard. So it said, okay, well, we'll let partners use it too, but that maybe it was never really intended to be much more than what it is. Could be.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems odd given that there is, you know, Bluetooth keyboards, I guess, are so widely available.
And the batteries last a long time. I mean, I've heard people say, well, yeah, but with the smart connector, you never need to charge the battery. It's like, yeah, but the battery is fine. I mean, like literally the smart connector makes the most sense for what it is used for, which is the smart keyboard. That makes sense because it needs to be powered by the device. It's too thin. It's too small to have its own power. It totally makes sense. But for any other accessory, I'm not sure it makes sense.
Well, yeah, you know what actually would be kind of cool for is what if there were magnetic chargers on the pencil and you just like clipped it on the side there and it charged there instead of sticking it into the lightning port.
I do wonder if they considered that, right? If like an earlier pencil design was magnetic and charged via that same location.
But you can't have a cover and then the pencil charging at the same time, which kind of makes it a problem. Yeah, there are some issues there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seems, we've talked a lot about the, you know, iPad and its struggles sort of, you know, finding a niche after its initial launch in some ways. And I wonder, this seems to me kind of like one of those situations where Apple's like, oh, we'll put this thing on here and it will be handy. And it's like, yes, it's not that it's a bad, you know, design decision or anything. It's just that it seems to be something that is not, it doesn't add that much. Like everything you're doing with this, you could kind of do before. And it doesn't really open up a lot of new possibilities, it seems like. So sometimes it seems like, I don't want to say they're grasping at straws, but it seems like they are trying to come up with something new to, you know, draw people in and get people excited about the iPad before. And this is not it.
Yeah, I agree. As much as I like my iPad Pro, quite frankly, the smart connector, I don't care. I mean, other than the fact that it enables the smart keyboard, which I think will be great for a lot of people. But beyond that, you know, it doesn't seem like much of a platform for other accessories. And let's be fair. There is nobody more aggressive about making money on new Apple products than accessory vendors. They are all over it, right? And there's nothing. And to me, that says that there's nothing to be done, or they would have tried it. Like, that either there's a real problem with the licensing or the technical stuff about it, or it's just not something that makes sense for anything. But I don't have anybody that I've talked to about it in the accessory. That's just my read from here. But the accessories people are generally very aggressive about doing stuff for Apple products. And I'll say this. I'll throw this out there to all the accessory vendors who are listening to this. First off, let me know about the smart connector. I'd love to hear if you've got reasons why it's a bad idea or why you can't support it. But I'll also put out a plea. It's like, I would really love somebody to make a knockoff of the Apple silicone case for the iPad Pro in a color that is not completely boring, because I've got the 12.9 and all I can get is white and a soothing gray and it's really boring.
Yeah, that's
it's pro. It's a professional. You gotta be all, yes, pros are all white and soothing gray. That's all they
it's,
wear.
It's a business in front and
white
business
shirt,
in back.
Soothing gray suit.
Yeah, Apple and the pro market always have had an interesting relationship in that way, which makes it all the more funny when they do things like announce, what was it, last week they announced the big deal with SAP. I literally cannot tell you anything beyond that because I got so bored reading the press release. But they've had that whole deal with IBM that they've been touting for a year or two now, and they're really working hard to try and capture more of that market. And to its credit, I think the iPad has done, and the phone itself have done very well in enterprise, but it also is a weird place for Apple to play because it's never really, I mean, it's never been a huge enterprise player. So I can see appealing to businesses, but it also seems like, again, I don't want to say grasping at straws, but like trying to really, really hard to find some place to make a, you know, a new inroad.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. So,
I like what I've seen in the Pro, but it has nothing there has convinced me to ditch my iPad Air immediately.
Yeah,
and
I was actually thinking, so Lauren's got an iPad Air 2, and I was thinking about what would drive her to go to the 9.7-inch Pro. And I thought about it, and I have no answer. Like, she's not going to use a pencil. She's not going to use the smart keyboard. There's no reason, right? I mean, the Air 2 is pretty great, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to play around with the pencil, but I'm not even sure that it would be anything beyond something I sort of fool around with for a couple weeks and then don't really use.
Yep.
So
that's what it's like.
Yeah,
that's what it's like for me.
Save my money.
I guess what I would say is, at some point as a writer, you might actually benefit from having a smart keyboard, because it means that you, and on the 9.7, it's doesn't really add appreciably to the weight, and it means you have a keyboard wherever you go. As you're carrying it around, you could always kind of flip out the keyboard and do some writing. But but you've got keyboard options now.
Yeah, and eventually I'm sure I will upgrade to something that has a smart connector on it, probably, because I'm sure they'll be making smart connector products for a few years, but certainly in the short term, there's really nothing there.
Yeah, I agree. All right. But
now that we've dissected the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else? I mean, we've been going for about a half an hour, which we're usually, that's what we're pretty good for. We're good for
that.
Yeah,
there's not, it's very quiet, really. Honestly, is the thing. We are in that sort of we're about a month from WWDC. And so I feel like everything kind of goes into hibernation mode.
A little bit. There'll probably be some leaks at some point from somewhere. Although it's a lot harder to do WWDC leaks because there's software. And software requires people in the know in Cupertino to squeal, which is different from the hardware leaks in the supply chain, because there's so many people and they're not Apple employees, and they have, you know, they're exposed to parts of the products, and that's where the leaks come from. So these software leaks are not, they happen, but they're a lot harder to come by for the Mark Gurmans of the world.
Yeah, not to, you know, fixate too much, but does it seem like the WWC will be a software only affair this year? Because I'm thinking over the product lines, like what haven't they introduced or what fits in the schedule? And
MacBook Pro is, I think, what everybody thinks they might do at WWDC, because the MacBook Pro really needs an update, and that audience would whoop at it, right?
I can also kind of picture a Mac Pro update.
Sure.
It's been a couple years since there's been anything really substantive. And the last time they did that, I believe it was also at WWDC.
So one of the things that people who follow my writing will possibly have noticed is I do not have the knowledge of Intel's schedules, right? It's not a thing that I've ever really been interested in. So I listened to Marco talk about the different Intel parts that are available that Apple
chipsets,
isn't putting
roadmaps,
in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, I know the big terms, but like somebody out there could tell us, and probably has told people before, that this is going to be that. But the thing is, a lot of what Apple does is contingent on that. Like, Apple does wait for a certain thing. Like, the reason that Thunderbolt 3 inside a USB-C port hasn't happened yet on a Mac is apparently because there are only certain chipsets that have that, and you can add it, but it gets complicated. It's like there are lots of reasons why it wasn't, for example, in the MacBook. It would have required, it just, you know, they would have had to re-engineer the insides of the MacBook, and they weren't going to do it. It may be on those MacBook Pros, but there could be somebody who says, well, the reason the MacBook Pros can't ship yet is because of X, because of these chips, you know. And it's not just are they shipping in quantity for Apple's purposes. Like there's complexity there, and I don't know all the chip complexity for Intel, but that would be my gut feel too, is that the Mac Pro is ripe for something. It's overripe, right? It's way overripe. Yeah. It's actually, if you've listened to those ATP episodes a couple weeks ago when they were talking about it, it's actually kind of embarrassing what Apple has done with that product. Cause that is it got a bump at one point, but it's like, they're selling like 2-year-old processors for full price today. You could buy a Mac Pro today, and it's kind of unacceptable, right? Like I would pity anyone who bought a Mac Pro today because they're buying 2 years ago technology for full price.
I can't imagine that they're selling that many of them. And there are a lot of people. I mean, Mike Hurley, he sold his to someone else, right? And bought a different computer.
Yeah, bought an iMac. And a lot of people, Marco did that too.
At a certain point, it is, as you say, it's tremendously expensive.
Yeah. But the pendulum's probably going to swing because they're probably going to release one that does do Thunderbolt 3 and supports an external HD display. Although even there, some people have told me, well, Thunderbolt 3 only won't drive a big 5K display except with like two channels, which is extra complicated. And so it may be, it may be that they won't do anything or they'll do something that's a little disappointing, but I'd put it on the WWDC list at least. I think it's a possibility.
Sure, I think it's possible.
And MacBook Pro too.
And part of me thinks that given that the Mac Pro at least has some assembly done in the US, enables tighter security on it.
Probably true.
Because it's a lot easier to control the information there than it probably is in say, China.
And everybody, and the parts might be different, but my guess is that the basics will be the same, right? So it's not like you're going to get a shot of a new Mac Pro enclosure.
No, they just did it. I mean,
it's going to look like that for a while.
Traditionally, they stay looking the same for super, like, right? Like the previous Mac Pro to that essentially looked like the Power Mac G5, right?
The G5 was released in like 2002, I'm going to say. And was that design up until the trash can came along 3 years ago?
There's no point for them to revamp it that substantially regularly because it is a product that is a high-end niche product that doesn't get sold very much.
It's all about what's on the inside, and that's going to be, what are the Xeon processors in there, and what are the video, video cards that are in there, the video chips that are in there. That's what it's all going to be about. And maybe they'll re-architect some of that, because I think a lot of the criticism of it was that they went kind of overboard with the GPUs. Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, they know their audience. They may be quite content with the very limited high-end audience that uses Mac Pros, and that maybe those people are getting what they want out of it. But, a lot of people who used to buy Power Macs and Mac Pros all the time kind of aren't now. And they're buying iMacs instead, which probably makes Apple happy. I don't know.
But I do agree.
I think that hardware is possible. And there's this meme going around that's like among people who cover Apple that's like, don't get excited. Apple never does hardware at WWDC. And it's not true. Apple's not going to launch an iPhone at WWDC.
Right. But not anymore, anyway.
Not anymore. But a Mac hardware at the developer conference. The developer conference, every iOS developer has to use a Mac. I mean, like, it's a good audience and a good place to fit some room in, a small amount of room for what you're doing on the Mac. If they're going to do the Mac in an event anywhere, it'll be at WWDC. So we'll see.
Yep. I totally agree with that assessment. That seems to be what we're looking at.
All right. Well, we will see what happens next month. But instead, in the meantime, we're in the quiet time. All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. We really appreciate you helping us keep the lights on. And we'll be back next week with another super secret Six Colors podcast for subscribers only.
Very quiet.
If you're not a subscriber, why are you listening? Please go subscribe if you aren't. No shame. Just make yourself feel better by subscribing, and then it's all good. All right. Talk to you next week, Dan. Bye.
Yep.
Bye.